We're discussing future treatments for Lyme disease here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. According to the CDC, about 476,000 people in the U.S. are diagnosed and treated for Lyme disease each year. But that's really ballpark. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention say there's really no way of knowing. People and animals can be infected by the bacteria transmitted through the bite of an infected deer tick. An antibiotic treatment is effective for most treatments, but not all. Some people suffer from symptoms like fatigue, muscle pain, and cognitive impairment. Did you recover from Lyme disease or have lingering symptoms? It's 800-642-1234 to share your story. Kim Lewis is a distinguished professor of biology at Northeastern University, where he directs the Antimicrobial Discovery Center. And he co-authored a study this month in the journal Cell. It's called A Selective Antibiotic for Lyme Disease. Kim, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you, Kate. It's a pleasure to be here, especially since I was a postdoc in the University of Madison.
Welcome home.
Thank you.
So people treated with oral antibiotics in the early stages of Lyme disease, the CDC says they usually recover rapidly and completely. Case closed. What if the round of antibiotics doesn't work and symptoms persist? Then what happens?
What happens is what is known as either chronic Lyme or post-treatment Lyme disease syndrome. We do not understand the nature of that disease. We just know the symptomology, muscle ache and pain, foggy mind, and fatigue. And currently there is no treatment against this really devastating condition.
Yeah, and the NIH, the National Institutes of Health, has found in its studies that long-term outcomes are no better for patients who received additional prolonged antibiotic treatment. And in fact, serious complications could occur. Is there disagreement in the medical community over how to treat Lyme?
Yes, this is a controversial subject. Some doctors think that patients do not actually have post-treatment Lyme disease syndrome, but this problem has been illuminated by the COVID pandemic, because now there's no question that a number of patients suffer from long COVID. Symptoms of long COVID are very similar to symptoms of chronic Lyme disease. It appears that a number of infectious diseases apparently wrecks the immune system, and then patients end up with this with these chronic symptoms.
Well, let's go into your lab, and you say Lyme disease is in a good position to be eradicated. What are you proposing?
We reasoned that it is not a good idea to treat the Lyme disease with broad spectrum antibiotics because they can wreck your gut microbiome, the collection of symbiotic bacteria that are so important for many aspects of health and have been linked causally to a number of autoimmune diseases. So we think that treatment with broad spectrum antibiotics, which is of course unavoidable at the moment for acute Lyme disease, may be contributing to the development of the chronic phase of the disease. So we set out to find a compound that is going to selectively kill the Lyme disease spirochete, Borrelia burgdorferi, and nothing else, not harm your microbiome, and perhaps diminish the probability of development of the chronic disease. And then in patients with chronic disease, if there is a lingering infection in some of them, then again, you would want to treat it with an antibiotic that is not broad spectrum, but selective. And maybe that will make a difference. So that's on the therapeutic side. But then on the side of eradication, I think that a Lyme disease is well poised to be eradicated, just as smallpox has been eradicated, or malaria in the U.S. and other developed countries. We have put the compound that we found, hygromycin A, which is highly selective against the spirochete, we put it in a bait, I fed it to mice, and that cleared the disease in mice very well. They were cleared of the spirochete infection. So now we're gearing up to do a field experiment, which will start next year, the support from NIH to put these baits into the wild and see if it clears the infection from mice, which are the primary carriers. I mean, it's called a deer tick, but it is the mice that we need to worry about most of all. If we can clear the infection from mice in the wild, then this will break the chain of transmission, and there is a potential to eradicate the disease from the environment.
We're talking with Kim Lewis, a biology professor at Northeastern University. We're discussing what could bring Lyme disease in check, under control. Are you worried about getting Lyme disease? Do you have the disease? Does someone you know have it? How do you manage symptoms? What do you want to know about the effects of Lyme disease? Join in at 800-642-1234. So when you looked at this compound, hygromycin A, the primary component of your treatment to fight Lyme disease, where did you find the compound?
Well, so we actually placed a bet that nature would bother to evolve a compound that acts selectively against spirochetes. Bacteria fight each other with antibiotics, soil bacteria, and then we borrow those antibiotics and develop them into drugs. So they're soil spirochetes that are competitors of many soil bacteria. And so we started testing soil bacteria for ability to produce something that will kill a spirochete, but not other conventional bacteria like, I don't know, Staph or E. coli. And so we hit upon a compound that was highly selective against all spirochetes we tested, including Borrelia burgdorferi. And I was convinced that this is a novel compound. That's what I told my guys from the lab, because it wasn't known that there's a natural antibiotic that is selective against spirochetes. Well, to our surprise, once we determined its structure, it turned out to be an old abandoned antibiotic, hygromycin A. Just nobody tested it against spirochetes. And it's a lousy antibiotic against other pathogens. So that's why it was never developed.
Oh, because it only really does one thing. It's very specialized.
It's pretty special. It evolved to kill spirochetes. That's what it does.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. So, you know, when you look at the side effects of treating with broad spectrum antibiotics, and we know these names from other infections, doxycycline, amoxicillin. Can you explain why the broad spectrum antibiotic approach isn't a good fit for Lyme disease?
Yeah, well, the primary reason for the poor fit is that these antibiotics, as was known and as we confirm in this study that you cited, they're really bad for your microbiome. I mean, they will kill indiscriminately symbionts that live in our guts and help us, among other things, to keep a healthy immune system. So now you wreck the microbiome with the broad spectrum antibiotic, and on top of the infection, which also affects the immune system. I think that the combination of these two factors is what probably brings on post-treatment Lyme syndrome. So we have a hope that this compound that's wrecking your microbiome and causing that, as you say, side effect, that will diminish the probability of developing a chronic disease.
If you're just joining us, we're discussing the possibility of scientists discovering a targeted treatment for acute Lyme disease with Northeastern University biology professor Kim Lewis here. Have you had debilitating effects from Lyme? What are your symptoms? What has your doctor tried? Have you had Lyme disease multiple times? Join in 800-642-1234. Back in a minute with Kim Lewis here on the Ideas Network. We're discussing how to treat Lyme disease, the tick-borne illness with cases on the rise, according to the CDC. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. So a group of researchers writing this month in the journal Cell have described a new antibiotic that appears to have the potential to cure Lyme disease. Have you been diagnosed with Lyme? Did a general antibiotic treatment work for you? If a vaccine for Lyme disease came to market, would you take it? Join in 800-642-1234. Kim Lewis is a biology professor at Northeastern in Boston, heads the Antimicrobial Discovery Center there. Let's go to John now in Jackson. Hi, John.
Good morning, Kate. Good morning, Kim. So I was about 30 years old. I like to spend a lot of time in the Kettle Moraine Forest, and I never realized how seriously bad the Lyme could get. So I picked it up a couple years ago. I don't have any of the long-term effects, but I started running out of energy at work. I had a couple days where my neck was having a hard time turning, and I started getting really tired all the time. So I went into the emergency room because I thought I might be having, there's obviously something very wrong. I couldn't even barely walk across the room without wanting to fall over. And they basically told me to tough it out. It probably wasn't anything serious. And the next day I ended up collapsing and almost having a heart attack. My heart really stopped beating. So if you think you have it, you got to make 100% sure that you get diagnosed properly, because I almost ended up losing my life over that scenario.
John, thank you for sharing your story. Kim Lewis, this can be extremely dangerous.
Yes. I am happy that you recovered. You recovered properly. What you probably had was Lyme carditis. The spirochete, it has a shape of a spiral. That's what it's caused, and it bores into organs and tissues. So it's a nasty pathogen. It can really mess up your life.
Let's go to Jim now in Cedarburg. Jim, hi. What is your question about Lyme?
Morning. Thank you. I assume that patients that have that are dealing with post-treatment Lyme are not eligible or able to get the hygromycin treatment. So what would the researcher suggest for those who are dealing with long-term effects of Lyme? Thank you.
Jim, thank you. What would you suggest if you're dealing with these long-term symptoms?
Jim, that is a tough question. I can say that I'm not a physician, but my colleagues and friends who are physicians, they have a very tough time treating patients who have post-treatment Lyme, because we do not have at the moment an approved treatment for post-treatment Lyme disease.
Go ahead.
That's, of course, one of the motivations for us to develop this therapeutic that we're discussing.
Yeah. Well, let's take Gene and Almond. Gene, hi. What is your question about the vaccine?
Well, I got my a vaccine for it about 25 years ago. It was a series of three shots. And then they stopped making it. And I'm curious about why they stopped making it.
Yeah, that's a great question, Gene. Kim, go ahead.
Yeah, there are two reasons for stopping to make the vaccine. One, there was a controversy about that vaccine possibly causing an autoimmune effect in some people. That was never proven. Probably that wasn't real. But perhaps the more serious reason was that the market wasn't there. With three shots and this disease not being, life-threatening for most people, it's just that people didn't have much of a motivation or enthusiasm to get vaccinated. And this question is, brought into perspective by our current COVID pandemic, where you will die from COVID with a distinct possibility. So this is a life and death question, whether you take the vaccine or not. And yet, 20 to 30% of people are not interested in being vaccinated. That doesn't bode very well for, the prospect of having the population being vaccinated against Lyme disease.
Hmm. We only have a minute left. I'm wondering, what is the future of your research? Where does it go next?
We are developing hygromycin A into a drug, doing additional animal safety and toxicity testing. The compound seems to be very safe. We don't see any side effects or any toxicity. And I hope that it will move into clinical trials and become a drug.
And clinical trials, that phase would be on animals or humans? How would that work?
So clinical trials is always on humans. You start with healthy volunteers to the safety, and then you treat patients with Lyme disease to see if it properly clears the disease. And apart from that, we will, of course, be curious to see if the antibiotic we're developing diminishes the probability for the emergence of a chronic phase of the disease.
Kim, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Kate. My pleasure.
Kim Lewis, professor of biology at Northeastern University. We have a link to the paper titled A Selective Antibiotic for Lyme Disease, published in the journal Cell. This is The Morning Show. And now, Wisconsin law enforcement agencies have had difficulty recruiting and keeping officers for years. The national reckoning last year over racial justice and calls for police reform only added to agency struggles. As Danielle Kading reports, the pandemic, rising violence, and intense scrutiny of police have made it more challenging to attract and keep officers.
Lauren Phillips remembers watching with her police academy classmates in Eau Claire this past spring as they waited for a verdict in the trial of former Minneapolis police officer Derek Chauvin. She says what Chauvin did was wrong, and they wanted justice to be served.
Everyone was anxious. Everyone was hoping that the right thing would come about. But at the same time, we're all sitting there like, what happens if this goes south? We were still recruits in the academy, but we still wore shirts that said, like, CVTC law enforcement.
Phillips and fellow students would change their shirts or grab a jacket before going out in public. Officers have faced intense outrage and criticism since Chauvin murdered George Floyd last May, igniting worldwide protests calling for police accountability. The negative attitudes toward police didn't sway Phillips. Now on patrol for Superior Police, she wants to bring more respect to law enforcement.
And they will remember you, and they will remember the things that you do. So it's one of those things to take into...
71.
It's just one of those things to be cognizant of when you are out in the community.
But it's getting harder to attract people like Phillips. A national survey of nearly 200 police departments found hiring dropped, while retirements rose 45% and resignations climbed by 18% from April of last year to this spring. Executive Director Jim Palmer with the Wisconsin Professional Police Association says the pandemic and intense scrutiny have made it more challenging to draw and keep officers.
There are more options for younger people today that pay better and don't require them to put their lives and their personal safety at risk, and that don't carry the significant enhanced scrutiny.
Massive protests unfolded in Milwaukee and Madison last year with calls to defund police. In Milwaukee, retirements among Milwaukee police spiked nearly 40% last year, with 131 officers calling it a career. In the last 5 years, more than 500 Milwaukee cops have retired. In an interview with the city's Fire and Police Commission, acting Milwaukee Police Chief Jeffrey Norman says the loss of officers is a challenge.
And so we need to have, again, something that we have not had in a long time. A consistency of a transition of when those particular type of individuals move on, are we able to continue to lift without having a blip on the radar?
Under the next budget, Milwaukee Mayor Tom Barrett is proposing to use COVID-19 stimulus funds to train 195 new officers next year.
Overall, the total strength of the department will be on average 1,657, not quite keeping pace with retirements.
In Madison, the number of applicants for this year's recruit class dropped by nearly 44%. The Police Association's Palmer thinks investment in community policing is crucial to building trust between officers and communities they serve. Megan Stroshein is an associate professor of criminology and law studies at Marquette University. She says more community policing would be a step in the right direction.
If we can improve the relationship between the police and the public, policing will become a more attractive position.
But Marquesa Tucker-Harris with the African American Roundtable says Milwaukee police have been talking about community policing for a long time, and she doesn't see it making a difference. She's been pushing for cuts to police budgets. She says taxpayer money should be shifted away from law enforcement to support housing assistance and other programs to address the root causes of poverty and violence.
What we do know
is what we've been doing isn't working. And we can't continue to waste money. We can't continue to allow lives to continue to be destroyed and lost.
The number of homicides had been falling in recent years across Milwaukee, but killing spiked during the pandemic last year with a record 190 homicides. The city is on track to break that record this year as police staffing in Milwaukee hits a record 20-year low. Danielle Kading, Wisconsin Public Radio.
And coming up, you have a line to Wisconsin Assembly Speaker Robin Voss on redistricting, his election review probe, and agenda for Wisconsin. What do you want to ask the highest-ranking Republican in the State Assembly? Join in, 800-642-1234. News update is next here in the Ideas Network.